that was being exposed. I love the scene in at the end after Susan had left him, and he's walking down the He's walking down the hallway in front of the Hall of Mirrors and the multiple facets of him, foreshadowing incredible use of mirrors in The Lady from Shanghai, which was a film that Wells did after this, and to great success showing many different facets of somebody, you know, visually telling you that. So that was quite interesting. No trespassing at the beginning and at the end. I think that's... can we ever really know a person, even a fictitious person, had he been real? Can you ever really know what's inside somebody's head without having walked in his shoes for a while? I think that's what they were really saying in many ways, that that Cain symbolized a lot of things as much as he you know, really was anything in particular. Any questions or comments, thoughts? Yes? What's funny is that at that moment that they show the two monkeys, there's a sign very clearly at the bottom of the frame that says Bengal tiger, showing that perhaps that was a misdirection or, of some kind. I'm not really sure what the iconographic reference of the monkeys were. They were often a motif in design as a servant, showing servitude, somebody to be your hands. But I'm not sure if that was the reference they were trying to draw. Yes, sir?
Almost seemed like about half the film was devoted to very very emotional close-ups of the characters in the film. A good part of the film, I'd say about half, was just these intense close-ups.
And pin sharp. Absolutely. And pin sharp, just spectacularly, flawlessly photographed. Did you notice that in a lot of those, the neck was featured? And they put lights at the side of the performers rather than above, which is the normal placement of lighting. It's normally overhead. And they did that for two reasons. One was so that they could reveal the ceiling without having lighting visible in it, but it also accentuated the makeup that they were doing to age people, so that we could jump back and forth in time, that we could be at different places. And I thought that the clay work on the necks were just spectacular. And again, in perfectly sharp focus, which to have that and then the middle and then the back, the deep background, 20, 30 feet away sometimes, is just a remarkable achievement. Tolan built a number of lenses for the film and were used exclusively on this and are sitting in a box at Paramount Studios, as far as I understand, and had plans for building another series after this. He became preoccupied with a number of other projects. Of course, his notoriety from this was huge and didn't fully explore the designs that he had intended, but, yeah. There's something that's come up hence... or after this film was created, called the Hitchcock-Truffaut rule. And that is generally, I'm paraphrasing, that the size of an object in the frame is directly proportional to its importance to the scene. And whether that's a character or an object, again, that was something that he really explored effectively in The Lady from Shanghai, having seen the things that worked and didn't work in this film and worked well, the foreground objects, the gargoyle that was looming over the scene when he was having an argument with Susan about what she was doing with her time, the jigsaw puzzle that she was playing. I really love that object. You know, it's just in complete silhouette, just on the edge of the frame, and it's as if it's ready to pounce on them somehow, but of course never does. A statue. Yeah. The statue motif. Did anybody notice the snow globe in Susan's apartment at the very beginning of their chance encounter? I really liked that, that was there. And it was, again, one of those things that was kind of large in the frame, Nobody pointed to it or looked at it or picked it up, but it was definitely there, and was a symbol of his youth and his desire to get back to the simple life, the simple pleasures of sledding and having the love of his mother and the warmth of what was taken away from him, unfortunately. Well, thank you all very much for coming by. I really enjoyed spending this time with you, and I look forward to doing it again sometime. Oh, I'm sorry. Question in the back? I think of it's coming up on Mardi Gras, so I think of the king cake. And one of these days I'm going to get the piece that has the golden baby in it, and it's going to mean something. Maybe I can create a film like this sometime, but it is one of those films that has so many layers and dimensions to every aspect of it. I love Wise, and I think that he lives up to his name because I'm sure that editing this film was not easy. The convention of the time, and still is, quite a lot of cutting, that you cover a scene with a wide master shot, you cut into close-ups for emphasis, and he had to hold back from what was probably a natural urge to do that, as that was the technique, and yet he didn't. He let the mise-en-scene, the scene happen in the single shot, work as the one and only bit, and I think his contribution for being a skilled enough to know that sometimes a lot of cutting is not better than very little. Agnes Moorehead, her performance as the mother was she held so deeply a feeling that you could see and yet not see. She was there. She loved Charlie. She wanted what was best for him, but she was in incredible agony letting him go, or pushing him away at the same time. And I thought that all of that was so nicely, you could see that on her face every moment. A very small role, something that, of course, she's not nearly as remembered for as much as Bewitched, perhaps, but where it's way over the top. But she showed so much control in that role that I think it was really, really beautiful. Yeah. Thank you very much. Have a nice afternoon.